You're listening to the Black Doula Podcast with myself, Sabia Wade, aka the Black Doula. Today's episode features Michelle High to discuss polyamory and the body. Hi, Michelle.
Hello. Thanks for having me on.
I'm excited. I feel like it's funny because we didn't know each other at all really before reclaiming the body. Mm-mm. And before the retreat. And I feel like I'm always like, hey, come on and talk with me. I'm like panel, podcast, like, come on, bring all the things. But thank you for accepting and for being here.
No, yeah. I mean, it's very exciting. I was like, oh man. I mean, I really respect them. I hope I seem cool.
We talk about how cool we're, well, uncool that we're becoming now as we get older.
Yeah.
But can you introduce yourself?
Yeah. So Michelle High, she, her pronouns. I run the Instagram account Polyamorous Well Asian. And I've been doing that for just a little bit over a year now. And through that page, I like to raise awareness around non-monogamy and just ways of relating that expand beyond the conventional monogamy and the relationship escalator. And so I offer like one-on-one peer support sessions. And I also try to come from a more like intersectional lens and try to spotlight like other BIPOC non-monogamous folks, because that's like, that representation is severely lacking in polyamorous community. Yeah. So it's been a lot of fun.
It's been fun for me to watch. So I definitely found your page when I was like, huh, am I poly? And I definitely think like, I'm like, what do I call it? Like, I call it like monogamous flexible.
Mm.
I'm like, can be monogamous, can venture to something else, but like, no need to like give myself this very hardcore label, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah, totally. And I always try to reiterate to people that it isn't like a one or a zero or black and white. It's totally a spectrum. And like, I consider myself polyamorous, but I really try to encourage people to just expand their view or understanding of relationships in general, whether it does become just end up being monogamous, or it does become more non-monogamous, or whatever it is, just trying to break free from the really like strict narratives that we find ourselves
for
in.
Sure. So can you give us, if it's possible, I guess like a definition or understanding of what is polyamory?
Yeah, I think in the most general of terms, polyamory is the ability or willingness to have deeper, I think, emotional or sexual relationships with more than one person at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that encompasses it.
It's so funny too, though. Like, I remember, because now how old am I? I'm 32 now. I remember a few years ago, you know how the world works, like media hops on something and then, you know, you get like a cheesy show about it. So I remember there was a show, was it on Showtime, HBO, I don't know, whatever the fuck, but it was a show about polyamory and they were like based in San Diego. Mm. And it was like, I just watched it like maybe a year ago, but I know it's like dated for like a few years back.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just interesting to, you know, these families and people becoming connected and like the rules and the emotions and the trust and the like, it was a lot. So I guess like one of my questions is like, okay, how do I even phrase this? So you being polyamorous, identifying that way, has it ever been like difficult to navigate all that comes with polyamory?
Especially. So I've been polyamorous for about 9 years, which is wild to think about. I mean, we were just talking about how we're like not cool and we're just getting older. We're not old, but we're definitely getting older.
Yeah.
So I started out when I was 18.
For sure.
And so I was just, of course, figuring out life in general too. So figure out life in general and then unpacking like monogamy at the same time. It was a lot. A lot of trial by fire. And I'd never been in a relationship before that. So the first partner who like introduced me to non-monogamy was like my first partner ever.
Mm-hmm.
So it was exploring non-monogamy and exploring just relationships in general. It was a lot to sift through. And of course, baby Michelle just didn't have very good boundaries.
didn't know what
the rules of engagement, you know, could be. Like I thought standing up for myself might make me come off as like a bitch or
mm-hmm.
Not cut out for non-monogamy. And so just kind of molding myself to make myself more acceptable to my partner at the time so that he wouldn't like leave me or whatever. so yeah, lots of ups and downs and lots of lessons learned, valuable lessons learned, but like that have maybe needed therapy to
sift through. Listen, always get the therapist and mm-hmm. talk ready for whatever. One of the things you just said that kind of stood out to me, and I think specifically because we've kind of had this conversation before at the virtual retreat that we did, is like this intersection that you're bringing into polyamory. And one of like your intersections is definitely like polyamory and being Asian,
mm-hmm.
polyamorous while Asian. And so one of the things you just said around like in your first relationship, you were trying to make sure that you were kind of like people, you were pleasing your partner. I'm going to do this to make sure that he's okay and I'm acceptable mm-hmm. and whatever. And I wonder like how much of that kind of thinking intersects with whether it's your race, your however you see yourself, like how much of that intersects with that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, and this is something that I've been thinking about for a while and still think about because it's just so hard to kind of parse through sometimes and try to figure out, you know, what is me? What is the authentic me versus, you know, what are the narratives that I've been playing into or that I've been put onto me? So, I mean, I feel like that's going to be a lifelong process, but I can say fairly certainly that, you know, being Asian and being a woman definitely played into me feeling like I had to kind of change myself or appease my partner. Because, yeah, a lot of conditioning around, I think, yeah, women in general in our society who are like, okay, we're here to basically mother our partners. Generally, I feel like maybe mostly in hetero relationships. I mean, it can get complex and stuff, but like generally, yeah, the woman kind of nurturing the man or taking on emotional labor and that burden. And on top of that, I definitely played into a lot of like leaned into the model minority as a youth.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely leaned into like, oh yeah, I get good grades and I'm quiet and I don't cause trouble. I'm here to make my parents happy, here to make teachers happy. And then, you know, I go on to college and I, you know, get a lucrative job and be a good contributing member of society. and that definitely translates into, you know, the microcosm, into like the relationships. So yeah, that totally plays into that. And like, I think there are aspects that like, you know, are definitely me because I tend to be more of like an introverted and just kind of more private person in some ways. Like I do like a lot of alone time. I do like, you know, I kind of do like being smaller in some ways.
Yeah.
But, you know, not in all ways. You know, there are times where like, yeah, I want to be able to fully express myself. I want to be able to like be myself and not have... I'd have someone like reject me or even have the fear of someone reject me or try to, you know, put me back into like a small version of myself. So yeah, totally. The intersections definitely are at play there.
And so one of the things too that is interesting, I'm like digging all into your life, but like one of the things that I also find interesting is like when you were talking about that, you know, like the intersections, your identity is how that kind of plays into wanting to please or, you know, sometimes feeling smaller, whether like voluntarily or involuntarily and all of that. I guess another thing that I am curious about is like in polyamorous dynamic, it can like, what are those like red flags of like, this is probably not a good dynamic. Like, this is probably not a good space. Cause like, for example, in a monogamous relationship, you know, there's always those things around like if someone makes you feel like you have to be smaller, if someone, you know, whatever those red flags are. But I feel like, you know, in polyamory, it is this openness. There is this ability to share yourself with other people. But also I see a lot of times where it's like, is this like fitting into someone else's ego and it's abusive?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, abuse, right. Abuse within polyamory structures specifically, I don't think is like talked about enough. And I feel like part of that is because we don't have a lot of the tools and language to talk about that. Like I recently have been reading the book Polysecure by Jessica Fern. And like, I appreciate that it talks about, you know, trauma and attachment styles and stuff, but through a non-monogamous lens.
Mm-hmm.
Like attachment styles is so like a popular topic right now, but it is usually on a like a dyad kind of scale. And so to have this discussion with regard to, you know, something less conventional in structure is really helpful. And so I would say almost all red flags in monogamy, I think in general can apply to polyamory, because I think polyamory structures really aren't that different. And it really can depend from person to person, because I think a lot of polyamory dynamics do still kind of run parallel to a lot of conventional monogamy dynamic. It just maybe adds one or two extra people, but it still follows maybe conventional rules with regards to like fidelity and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I think for me, red flags that are specific to polyamory are people who definitely claim that they're non-monogamous, but I guess do it unfairly or unethically, yeah, where it's like, I can be non-monogamous, but you can't.
Yeah.
Or there's like the quote unquote one penis policy thing, where it's like, oh, I can yeah, date multiple women, but you know, my female partner like can date other people, but they have to be women, or like specifically cis women. It's mm-hmm, yeah. And there's like transphobia in there too. And a lot of problems.
Seen that for sure.
Yeah. And not that I have like an enormous sample size, but I don't ever see that like playing out well, yeah, or playing out sustainably.
I mean, it's never like, you know, it's never a good dynamic to like tell someone that they, you know, that you can have what you want, but the other person can't, or they have half of what they want. Like, that doesn't usually work out. Someone's going to be resentful. Someone's going to be something. Yeah. Or even the person who's making the rules may feel paranoid because it's just like this limitation. And I feel like it's weird anyway. Like, I mean, people have their own rules, so no shade for anybody in their own rules. But I also feel like with polyamory, from what I've learned about it and from being a witness to it, to be limited in a lifestyle that is about openness and awareness and, you know, love and community is just really fucking weird anyway. So like,
yeah,
it just doesn't quite make sense to me.
Yeah. And this is something that I think about a lot, because there are parts of me that find myself judging when I see polyamorous structures that aren't like my own, or the way that, you know, they do relationships aren't like my own. But like, I have to remember, like, okay, it's fine. There are a spectrum of ways that like people can practice polyamory and it can be healthy and sustainable. Like for me, I don't tend to like rules, like hard and fast rules, like boundaries. You know, if you want to talk about boundaries and stuff, that's great. It's really funny because like kink-wise, I tend to be like a subleading switch. So it's like, in certain situations, I love being told what to do. I love having rules and stuff. But outside of that situation, it like makes me see red if someone tries to tell me what to do or tells me that I can't do a specific thing. And it makes me see red.
Makes sense. We who we are in our kinky space is like sometimes very opposite from who we are. We're not in that space.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Like for me, I don't like rules, and I don't tend to have like hierarchy for me. Like I can accept entering into a hierarchy if, you know, we communicate and everyone's on the same page. Especially since I'm like more solo poly. And so I'm more of like the free agent. I tend to find partners, especially long-term partners who have other partners. And I feel like that works for me because then I don't have to worry less about those partners. Not that I love them less or that I like want to give them less, but like, I don't feel this pressure to be like, okay, I'm like their go-to for mm-hmm, everything. And
I get that. You're like, we can share the like emotional responsibility of partnering.
Exactly. If that makes sense. Exactly. Exactly. So like, I'm totally fine with other people who have hierarchy, and I think organic hierarchy, because like one of my partners, he and his wife have been together for like 12 years and they have a house and they pay bills together and stuff. So like, of course there's going to be certain like a prioritization there. But you know, through the years, I've determined that like, it doesn't mean that I'm any less valued. It's just a mm-hmm, different relationship. So yeah, going back to like the spectrum, and there are some non-monogamous structures that do have rules and that works for them. And yeah, sometimes I have to be like, oh no, you can't judge that right off the bat, because it really does work for some people. And having that structure can really help. And I'm like, I mean, if that makes them more happy and fulfilled, then really more power to them.
And do you think, like, within, because I feel like with, I mean, I'm just going to assume that with, like, polyamory, it's, like, anything that goes against the status quo is that, like, you have to kind of find community to, I mean, even just be able to have conversation with people that can relate to, like, what you're going through or how things are working, or to ask people about their opinions. So, like, has it been hard for you to find that community, or has it been, like, what has been your experience in that?
So, because I tend to be more kind of introverted, like, I'm not really one of those people who, like, goes out to events and, like, networks and stuff like that. I tend to be like, I need to have someone there with me, preferably someone more extroverted. So like in Portland does, I think for a big city, we do have, like, a good size polyamory community. And there are a lot of, like, meetups and stuff that people can go to. And for a while, I think in my first few years, I did go to some. And I just found that I didn't vibe with a lot of the people there. Not that they were, like, bad or anything.
Yeah.
I just mm-hmm. think that, you know, like, I think intersections of, like, interests, you know, didn't quite click. And I found that it's interesting now because, like, with my page, I do talk about polyamory a lot, but I find that I don't jive the best with people who talk about polyamory a lot. They center their whole life around polyamory.
I feel the same way sometimes about kink. Like, if I meet people, yeah. I'm like, can we, you know, like, I understand that we're all kinky, but can we just talk about something not kinky so it can feel well-rounded?
Yeah.
I get that.
And then it's funny because, like, not surprisingly, there are overlaps in, like, polyamory and kink communities. So it's, like, a lot of people that I would see in polyamory communities, like, you know, I would see at a kink night. Mm-hmm. And yeah, again, like, you know, my page is a lot about polyamory, but I don't talk exclusively about polyamory. You know, like, a lot of like, current events and social justice topics are very important to me. So I gravitated away from, you know, like, in-person Portland polyamorous community, because I think for me, polyamory is more of kind of the background. Like, it is just the way that I live my life.
Mm-hmm.
And while I do like to kind of raise awareness and kind of advocate for non-monogamy, what I'm really advocating more for is just more intentional relating and
mm-hmm.
just kind of examining, you know, the primary monogamous narrative more. And I think that's what's more important to me. So this past year, actually, I feel like I've built or found more community, like, online, like, via Instagram.
Found you. So, like, with that, right? So there's that communal piece. And I guess, like, when you, like you said, you're, like, at 18, I, you know, got to polyamory and, like, this is my lifestyle. So is it kind of, like, the same thing as, like, being queer and having to come out the closet to your family? Like, what, like, what does that look like? Or is it just, like, family, mind your business and keep it moving?
My relationship with my family, it's, like, we walk a line, you know, because we have established that we have very different values. And so I think, like, especially my mom, because my mom is, like, the matriarch. Mm-hmm. She has, I guess, kind of determined this sort of don't ask, don't tell. Like, I just want my family together. So we're going to try not to ruffle feathers. I just want, like, all my children together under one roof and that kind of thing. And hopefully get through one peaceful dinner together. So, I think we've had this sort of, like, silent understanding where it's like, okay, you don't want to know, you know, it's going to make you uncomfortable. So don't ask. Mm-hmm. So I think my mom has long suspected that I'm not straight, but I've, like, never explicitly told her. But that's also a thing where it's like, yeah,
moms know.
Yeah. Where she probably knows, but she's not going to ask me about it. And with regard to, like, polyamory, the only person in my family who knows is my sister, because we're super close. And I think my philosophy with regard to coming out is that we should kind of deprioritize the coming out narrative, because I think there's too much pressure put on that, as if it's, like, a rite of passage and, like, you're not queer enough, or maybe you're not polyamorous mm-hmm. enough unless you come out, where it's like, it's really your business. It's nobody else's business. Like I don't have to, you know, announce, you know, what my, what my like medical history is to anyone, or what my, I don't know, what my education mm-hmm. background is to anyone necessarily, because it's not necessarily relevant.
I know, it's so weird too, because it's just like, you want me to just come out and tell you who I'm having sex with.
Exactly.
Right. Why is that information needed to be my friend?
Right.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's like, I was like in North Carolina this past weekend, and me and my friend were talking about like, just like how media, especially when they're talking about anything that's like queer or whatever, they just, it's always like the movie is always about the coming out piece, or it's always about like, it centers that part of their experience. And it's like that, you know, for some people, it's just a moment in time. Like they also have these other layers that are probably way more interesting, honestly, but like, I don't know, the average person just loves a good coming out story, but it's like, let's like diminish that and get out of that space.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean, I think like coming out narratives can be powerful, and like there definitely still is a use and it still has a place, but yeah, if we just crank it back just a little bit and just kind of normalize more, just letting people live and being okay with it.
Letting people live. Like, what a big ask. Like, yeah. Let people live. Mm-hmm. Why can't we just do that?
Right.
But it's difficult, apparently. So another question that I have for you, especially, is like, I feel like you, at least my vibe is that you kind of see relationships differently, maybe. Because I mean, I feel like, you know, in monogamy to some regard, there is like this hierarchy, right? And there's also another thing around like intimacy that can only be shared with certain people. And even for me, like I've had to kind of remodel that whole like intimacy and friendship and importance and like whatever it is. And I feel like even what you're talking about being like solo poly, and kind of finding yourself in relationship with people who are already in relationship with others, that like your view of intimacy relationship has to be different, because I'm trying to think of myself, like if I walked into a dynamic with someone who was already in relationship, I would probably feel away sometimes. I might, because I'm so used to that structure around like, this is your primary relationship and this is the one that you give all your attention to and this is who you focus on, and like, you know, that kind of thinking doesn't leave space for other people. Mm. So mm-hmm. I guess just some thoughts about your view of that and like your experience with that.
Yeah, I mean, right, like this past like nearly a decade has really been a transformation of how I view, you know, the way I relate to people. And I think, yeah, the way that people relate to people in general, and really moving more and more away from this more monogamous kind of mindset or narrative. I tell people that, you know, I've been doing this for nearly a decade and I feel like I do have a lot figured out for myself, but I also like to clarify to people that I still have a lot of shit that I haven't figured out that I'm still like stumbling through, you know, things like jealousy and whatnot. Like a lot of people think that if they feel jealous, they can't do non-monogamy, but it's like, hey, I'm like this shy, introverted, anxious like person who still experiences jealousy, and I'm really happy with non-monogamy. So I'm telling you, it can be done. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just so fascinating to think about. Like recently I was thinking about like, you know, how all relationships are political, because politics, what else is politics, you know, except for just thinking about how we relate mm-hmm. to one another and how we choose to, you know, situate and structure how we relate. And it's just, yeah, like for me, it took me a while to realize that like, oh, you know, I do like to live kind of by myself. I do like to have my own space that I can kind of retreat back to and recharge and just feel kind of safe and kind of turn off like the social anxiety brain for a bit. And it does feel like a relief sometimes when I find partners who have other partners. And especially if like, it seems like the situation is really healthy and stuff, mm-hmm. because, you know, like we were talking about earlier, like it does feel like, you know, sharing the kind of weight of the relationship, and like, it doesn't have to just fall on my shoulders. And I can always maybe have someone else's help. And yeah. And even though I'm solo poly, like my ideal structure does revolve more around like kitchen table polyamory, where, you know, I have my partners and I know my, you know, metamors or are friends with my metamors. I do like kind of like the breaking down of those barriers, but also something that like baby Polly and Michelle had to learn was that like, you can't force those relationships. You can't force friendships with metamors because I had that like implode a couple of times.
So like, I'm going to be friends with everyone. Right? I'm like, no, we don't. I just want to be cool and cordial.
Exactly.
That's it.
Yeah. And being okay with like, oh, even if we aren't like super close, like at least we're like respectful and we're cordial and, you know, we have, you know, some commonalities, but we don't have to be like best friends. Yeah. So, I mean, the way that I view relationships these days, I think the biggest thing is that it's not all or nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, there isn't this pressure to put all my eggs in one basket. There's this freedom to like, I don't know, spread my eggs around.
Michelle. Spread the eggs around, literally and figuratively.
Yeah, I'll just stop with that metaphor right there. But yeah, this all or nothing thinking that just kind of like is just kind of dissolving away, and it does feel much more liberating. And it's interesting kind of exploring how much I feel I am able to give more and more, because I used to think that like, oh, I have to like protect my energy and I can't, you know, share this with too many people because I just don't feel like I have the strength for that. But, you know, realizing that, you know, I can kind of spread it around,
mm-hmm.
that there are different people who accept, you know, different aspects of me. Like it is very empowering, and it, you know, I feel like gives me even more energy to share around even more. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think like that all or nothing piece, right? Like that is something that, in my opinion, you know, is really helpful for monogamous, polyamory, whatever kind of person you are. It's like, I mean, I think that's, you know, somewhat in a lot of ways, like the downfall and breakdown of a lot of relationships is just like this idea, especially romantic relationships, this idea of you're my person, which means that like you have to be everything and I have to be everything to you, and like the fucking pressure that builds mm-hmm. up when you're trying to, you know, check off all these boxes and be all these like versions of yourself for this person. And it really doesn't leave space for you to just be you. It really doesn't leave space for you to just like be resourced well, right? Like, mm-hmm. and it's something that I had to learn just in a sense of like, even in a long-term relationship, like I need my friends, or I need like, or whatever that may look like, whether it's other lovers, whatever it is, it's just that ability to know that my needs can be met, but not in a way that is going to cause somebody anxiety because it's going to like be all things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just too much. Like I, you know, constantly tell people like, I can't be everything to you. I don't even have the energy for that. Like, but I can be a lot of things. I can give you a resource, but I can't be everything.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's, yeah, I think that's like the beautiful thing about like, even within monogamy, like you were saying, just, I think like relinquishing, you know, oneself or like your partners from having to be everything and accepting them as enough. And like, of course there are standards that it's like, you know, you can't just like eke by just like bare minimum and that's enough. It's like, no. Like, you know, having standards and being like, wow, you know, maybe this person isn't like, you know, like the sex with them isn't the greatest, but like they're so emotionally stable, they're so mm-hmm. supportive and stuff, and like there's no reason to throw this person away. And like people aren't disposable either. Like,
yep,
mm-hmm. yeah, there's no reason to like break up this relationship because maybe one or two aspects of it are that aren't deal breakers. Like, you know, it's not perfect. It's like, well, that's what, you know, other people are for, you know, that's what maybe friends
and like,
or,
and that's yeah. life. Like if mm-hmm. we look at ourselves, like a reflection of ourselves and be honest, like we're also not perfect, right? Like there's things that, you know, when I'm in relationships with certain people, I'm like, you probably want to have this conversation with someone who's more emotional because I'm more logical, you know, like I'm like, I know what my downfalls can be in certain dynamics. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just like, I might not be the person for this particular thing. Cause mm-hmm. that's not like the way that I deal with it is probably not complementing the way that you deal with certain things.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just think like spreading yourself in a way that is healthy removes this like level of anxiety and perfectionism and this weight. And like I feel like if we all could also get to a point of accepting, like, I am enough just as I am. Just like, you know, whoever I'm with is enough just as they are. But enough doesn't equal perfect, mm-hmm. right? Like, it equals good, great, but like not perfect. And like, it's yeah. okay.
Oh yeah, like perfect. I mean, perfect is not only overrated, but like, it's just, right. It just sets us all up for failure.
All the time.
And I think so much, yeah, so much of like the monogamous norm in like movies and TVs and, you know, all of our media, it's like, oh yeah, the perfect one true love and happily ever after mm-hmm. is perfection. Yeah, it just sets us up for failure. And I think on the other extreme, some people are like, oh, okay, you have to like learn how to settle. And it's like, it's not really about settling either. It's about, you know, yeah. knowing where you can find certain resources and knowing where else you can get it when you're lacking here. And I like, you know, what you were talking about with like, you know, like knowing, you know, like knowing my own limitations and boundaries and stuff where it's like, you know, I'm not going to be the most emotional. I think that has definitely helped as well, like continuing to kind of like deep dive into like self-acceptance mm-hmm. and being like, because I used to get down on myself for not being a bit more expressive or like the more like really dive into intimacy and lovey-dovey and stuff. And it's like,
we are the same person. Yes.
Because like, and it takes me a long time. I'm like a slow burn. I mean, my current like long-term partners know that like, I am a slow burn. but like once I get there, like I am like, you know, very, very much open to being vulnerable and open and stuff. It just has to take a while. It takes me a while to get comfortable, to trust. Mm-hmm. And like, of course, I want to work on having that be not quite as slow a burn, but also accepting the fact that like, it's okay that I'm not one of those people who's like a golden retriever. And it's like, yes, I want to be with you. I want you to be my person. And I love you. And,
that is definitely a golden retriever.
Yeah. And
I'm definitely not that.
Oh yeah. Either. And like, right. It's okay. Yeah.
It depends. Like sometimes I'm hot and sometimes I'm cold. Like sometimes I'm like slow burn and sometimes I'm like, hey, let's do it. But you know, it just, it fucking varies by mm-hmm. person. So what advice would you give, you know, like, because I've had a lot of people that come into my space, whether it's like my Instagram space or whatever it is. And like, you know, I talk about kink and, you know, I talk about polyamory, like dashes of like that in there just for me, like experimenting in my own life. But like, what would you tell like the, you know, the baby poly that's just coming into the world, you know, needing guidance, mm-hmm. needing a little reassurance, needing a little support. What would you tell the baby poly? Yeah.
Something that I like to remind people is that we literally have decades of monogamous programming and we literally have decades of all of these very conventional narratives. And so breaking those down, like it's not going to take like a day. You know, it might not even take a year and it might be like a lifelong thing, or you might figure out, you know, before long that it's not for you. And I think we have to, again, with like the all or nothing thinking, like we have to detach ourselves from like, okay, this is like the way, you know, I found the way. Mm-hmm. And I think anyone exploring polyamory or non-monogamy in general should try as best as they can to keep an open mind. And at the same, on one hand, to kind of be open and explore and be curious. And on the other hand, really taking responsibility for kind of making choices in your relationships, because I think in non-monogamy, it's a lot harder to just coast on by on just like the default mm-hmm. settings. like you really do have to take the responsibility to choose like, okay, this is how I want this relationship. But maybe in this relationship, this is how I want this relationship. And kind of like toggling switches on and off and like actually communicating. So on the one hand, being open and curious, on the other hand, like, you know, being open and curious with accountability and responsibility.
Yes, accountability. And
like, you know, really, yeah, really taking charge. Mm-hmm.
And like, so this is going to be kind of off because that was great. But I just thought about one of the posts that I saw on your Instagram and your story, mm-hmm. I think. And if I remember correctly, listen, my brain don't always remember correctly, so we gonna just rock with it. But if I remember correctly, I forgot what, maybe someone was asking like questions or whatever, but I think you said something about like getting like you know, like your annual like OBGYN exam or whatever it is, getting checked out and then finding out that you have an STI and you were like, it happens. Like,
yeah.
Like, and I just like appreciated you being like, it happens, guys. Like, we're not going to like make this into a, you know what I mean? Like, we're not going to make it into like the worst thing that could ever happen. It's just like, this is a natural part of the process. This is like what is possible. So I guess like one, just name that I appreciate the normalization of that. And two, like, how is it to navigate like that sexual part of it and wanting to be safe, but also like things happen.
I mean, the key is always like upfront communication. Like anyone who, you know, starts like seeing me or whatever knows that I'm non-monogamous. They know that I'm sexually active with other partners and stuff. Like, that's never a secret. And I think that's really important, like always. And the first, I mean, the first time I got an STI, I was freaking out because like all of the, like that shamey sex ed was like blaring in my head that I'm like,
you did something wrong. You should have did something better. Yep. You could have been safer, like whatever.
And then I'm like dirty. And the reason why I found out too was like, because like I was asymptomatic, but then like another person, who like, I'm the only person they have sex with, like they had symptoms and they caught it. So then I felt bad because I'm like, oh no, like, you know, it's one thing for me to get it, but then like I pass it on to someone else, that feels bad. But yeah, like, and you know, like we had discussions around it and like he was really understanding too, which I like super appreciate. But yeah, like it happens. And most of these are like, gosh, I can't remember what, I feel like there's like this snappy phrase that a lot of like sex ed accounts use where it's like, even if it's not, it's either curable or treatable. Like, yeah. Yeah. Like they're all, most of them are curable and at worst they're treatable.
Yeah.
So it's not like the end of the world. And, you know, people asked me like, oh, how do you not feel afraid about like contracting diseases and whatnot? And I'm like, that concern is always like at the back of my mind. And, you know, like, I do my best to, you know, practice safely, but right, things slip up, things happen. Yeah. Yeah. And right. Then you go to the doctor and you get tested and you get your antibiotics and you take that for a week and a half and then we move on.
But I also think like, it's like that part you're talking about is like that. I mean, the one thing that I really love, which is funny, I really love this about polyamory, like healthy polyamory dynamics as well as like healthy kink dynamics, is like that communication. It's like, if we're all putting things, even like as a doula, right, like that's also my world, is like, let me tell you the possibilities of what could happen in this experience. And I think anytime that you communicate, whether it's like the great parts of polyamory and BDSM or whether it's the more complicated parts of polyamory and BDSM or even childbirth, when people know, it's like, I don't know if I'm going to use the word empowering, but it's kind of like knowledge is power. And also it creates like more stability. And like, I may not be excited about having this STI, right? Like I may not be like jumping over the moon about this, but I had awareness that this was a possibility. So now I can go and like do whatever I need to do to work within that. And I think like that part is just like the part that I love around, I guess, being a doula, being polyamorous, being like kinky, is just like, it's so important, that communication piece.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like a joke now or a stereotype, but like, yeah, polyamorous people just like communicate the hell out of their relationship. Yeah. It's just like talk. Like we just talk about the relationship like all the time.
Do you ever find that difficult?
I mean, going back to, you know, stuff that I still have to figure out, like, I'm still not the best at like bringing stuff up, you know, because I still have like this fear of confrontation. I still, you know, I don't like difficult conversations and stuff. So like, I'm so grateful to have partners that, you know, I have been able to kind of like co-create kind of like safer ways of communicating and kind of like holding space for one another in a way that doesn't just make me like flight or freeze. Yeah. So it is still difficult. It is still difficult. Like sometimes, you know, when I have like bad feelings, like if I'm feeling suddenly like upset, it is hard for me to like bring that up. It is still kind of my default in a way to kind of push that down and like, okay, Michelle, you're just going to have to go off and deal with this later. But
deal with it by yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Exactly.
What's your attachment style?
I think it tends toward like dismissive avoidant.
I knew it. Because I was like, yes, I know, because I'm the same fucking way.
There you go.
And that's like, I think I read this article around like attachment styles and polyamory, which I found to be like interesting. Because, you know, like as like avoidant people, I mean, like with anything, right? Like we want to be loved. We want to be, you know, in relationship with people, so on and so forth. But sometimes like that emotional piece, we're just like, oh, please not today. I'm like, you can't be like that. But like you said, it's also around like having partners who understand that piece of you and can like, at least for me with the dismissive of what it's like, give me space so that I can come to you when I'm ready. But if you're like forcing me to be extra, like I'm just going to get pissed off and shut down.
Yes, exactly. Like that. I feel the exact same way where it's like, I do not like people pressuring me at all. Like if I feel any pressure, like if I'm in a more submissive mode, I'll just kind of shut down. If I'm in a, like a more, I guess, dominant mode, mm-hmm. I could just get angry. Yeah. My longest term partner is like, what I appreciate most about them is that they will give me space. And like, maybe like if they notice something, they'll maybe check in and I'll be like, nothing.
Not the time.
No.
Right.
Yeah. And they'll know that like, I'm not necessarily hiding from them. It's just, I need to process on my own and like I'll come back later mm-hmm. and be like, hey, so you know, yeah, when I was
I do the same thing. Like in my house we have like 3 floors, and so like when my partner, I'm not partner anymore, but when my ex-partner was here, like let me go upstairs and mind my business for like 2 good hours, just doing whatever I need to do. Sometimes that's just like watching Netflix and chilling. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's doing some work, and then like it'll just hit me where I'm like, okay, I'm ready to talk now. And like, yeah, it just freely it flows. There's no barrier to my communication, mm-hmm. but like, I need the space in order to be ready for that.
No, yeah, exactly. And like, I've learned like physical touch is really important to me, and it's, I find it very comforting. So it's like, sometimes I'll be like, you know, hey, can we like talk and stuff? And then I'll, you know, like situate myself so that like, you know, he's sitting at, like on the couch and I'm like lying down and I like have my head in his lap, mm-hmm. because like, you know, like creating these containers of safety in these ways, or it's like, you know, can I, or sometimes where it's like, he's sitting on the couch or I am like on the floor because I don't know, I find being on the floor comforting. I feel like it's kind of childlike. Mm-hmm. And then I can like rest my head on his knee and kind of talk, and it feels very safe and comforting. Mm-hmm. So yeah. And
how do you deal though when you're like, okay, so let's say like you and one partner are in a dispute of some mm-hmm. sort, right? And like, you know, you don't not like each other, but you're dismissive avoidant. So I'm just going to assume that you're taking your time away to kind of like process whatever you need to process. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that processing too, I know for me, it's like, it's so I don't say something mean to you.
Yeah.
It's like, so I can think really through what I'm feeling and like not feel like regretful for saying some wild shit. Mm-hmm. Right. But anyway, so if you're in conflict with one partner, like, do you like just go hang out, not just go hang out with another partner, but if you're like planning to go hang out with another partner, how does that feel to be like in conflict with one person, but then trying to be present for the other person? Like, that's one of the things that I'm like with my like sometimes low emotional capacity. I'm like, how would I navigate those types of situations where I'm in my feelings, but also trying to be present? And maybe there's another partner who's asking me to just like how my day is, or maybe needing support. It's like that capacity for the emotions. How the fuck do you do that?
Yeah, I think the solo poly thing helps because also it helps me like spread things out. So I'm trying to think. So like in my first relationship, like when I was baby poly and Michelle, that was like a 5-year-long relationship. And like we definitely like attached, like glommed on and, you know, like moved in together, lived together. And of course, much more difficult.
Whole thing.
Yeah, much more difficult to like have space when you live together. But like, I can just go back, like fuck off back to my own home and like be like, and play with the cats and stuff. So I think I tend to spread things out. So I'm trying to think like these days, yeah, it doesn't really overlap a whole lot in that way, because a lot of the time, like if I do come back to my own space and like have time to think, like, you know, like you, like once I'm ready, you know, might take just a couple hours. Like for me, sometimes it's easier for me to just text because it's nice. It's slower. I can edit and mm-hmm. I can still process more on my own time and not have to focus on like the social aspect of it. And just like, yeah, because I feel like if I'm in the same room with a person, it's just my social brain is on and it just, there's so much anxiety. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I tend to like through text want to resolve things fairly, I guess, in a timely manner so that it doesn't just like keep kind of festering mm-hmm. and whatnot. And yeah, with these specific partners, like they're very like open to that and they handle that really well. So fortunately I haven't had a whole lot of like, you know, crossover disputes and that kind of thing. But I mean, it took several years to get to this place where I have these partners and these kind of modes of relating that are conducive to that.
Yeah, that's super important because, yeah, like just think about that, like avoidance. It's like, please don't, like, please leave me alone. Mm-hmm. Like, it'd be so much better if you leave me alone. I'll come back to you in 2 hours and I'll love you again.
Right.
Just like, leave me alone.
Yeah.
Which I was like, once you said you were solo poly and then you were like describing other things, I was like, oh, she's avoidant. I get it. Makes so much sense now.
Yeah.
So can you tell us just a little bit more detail about like the services that you offer? I know you said like one-on-one sessions and things like that, but give us the deep.
Yeah. I mean, I really do like spreading awareness around, I guess, non-monogamy and, you know, helping people think, I guess, or examine a bit more closely their own relationships, whether monogamous or non-monogamous. So I do provide a lot of resources and stuff on my Instagram page for free. And then if people do want more like in-depth conversations about their specific situations, like a lot of people, you know, used to really go into my DMs a lot, you know, with their long situations. And it's like, I really do want to help you, but I don't feel like I have the capacity to like mm-hmm. just dole out a lot of free information, just like via DM. So yeah, I offer peer support sessions and they can be one-on-one. And I've also like chatted with like couples at the same time. And I feel like most of the time it's just kind of affirming that people aren't weird, that it's like, I mean, I'm hearing what you're saying and I'm telling you that all these desires aren't weird. That they're very...
Can you give us an example? Because I think like that is like a lot. I've noticed that too, just in the world and the things like, because, you know, I'm all in all types of world, birth, kink, this, that, whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's always the biggest thing. Like people just need to be affirmed and that they're normal or close to it. Mm-hmm. So what are some examples of like how people come into the conversation with you?
Yeah. Like a lot of people who are, you know, I get a lot of people who are just starting out or wanting to start out. And so they just have questions about like, I mean, what if, like going back to like, you know, feeling jealous, like what if I feel jealous or, you know, I am feeling jealous and I feel like a terrible person. I feel like a terrible partner. And they tell me their situation. And it's like, I feel like usually whenever people feel jealousy, it always feels like reasonable. Like it's never an excuse for anything, but it's always reasonable. Mm-hmm. I think like there's yeah. always a reason. And I think people think like, oh, am I crazy? You know, am I, especially women. And I think that's telling, like, it's especially women that have that concern.
We're all supposed to be cool cucumbers, Michelle. Right? We're all supposed to like yeah. be so cool and smooth and have no like hard feelings, no jealousy. We just all got to be cool.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That thin line between like being cool or just being that crazy bitch. Like,
yeah, exactly.
It's like exactly. No wiggle room. But yeah, then I tell these people that like, right. So it sounds like, you know, based on the situation that you're telling me that all like the reactions that you're having are like valid, that they're, they seem like very reasonable human reactions to these situations. And they're like, okay. Okay. Because yeah, I feel like so much of the narrative is like, yeah, jealousy bad or like maybe jealousy is good, but in mm-hmm. a very toxic way where it's like, oh, they're jealous. That means they love me.
Yes. Yeah. It's like, yes, you're saying the truth on that one. And I guess it is like one of those things where like, especially if you're like, you know, exploring polyamory and you really don't have the community either. And sometimes you don't have the people around mm-hmm. you to really talk through things. And then also sometimes, like you said, like people just have different thoughts about different feelings and how it works. So I can definitely see your service being like, you're basically like the poly professional.
Yeah.
Like you're just like come into my space, tell me the things and I'll hold the space for you. I'll let you know that it's okay and that all is well.
Yeah. And like, there are some people who I talk to who like, they have therapists, but like these therapists aren't like poly educated necessarily. So sometimes they're like, yeah, I told my therapist about, you know, my relationship situation. And she was just saying that like, it sounds like it's wrong and kind of like shaming things. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's really unfortunate. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad that they have you to speak through and talk through all the things, because I mean, I always like feel like and I don't know if you feel this way, like, cause you live in Portland. So I feel like we're kind of spoiled with like, you know, viewing things such as polyamory or BDSM or whatever as kind of like a normal part of life, like an expression of self, even if we may not express ourselves like that, right? So it's just like, it feels normal. But then I talk to people that aren't in those type of spaces, aren't in that kind of community. And I'm like, damn, like that shit has to be hard. Yeah. Like to go to your therapist and hear some bullshit, like just burn the whole shit down, you know, like, like it's terrible. But can you just tell our, viewers, we're not viewers, our listeners, where to reach you, how to follow you, whatever you want them to know.
Yeah. So my handles are pretty much the same across the board. Like I'm mostly on Instagram, like any of the social medias, like I do have a Facebook page and stuff, but Instagram is where I'm at. Yeah. So yeah. And it's just at polyamorous while Asian. And people can DM me there, or I have my email on there as well. That's the primary way to reach me. Yeah.
Sure. Well, I want to thank you for spending time with me today. And like, I can definitely talk to you forever, because every time you're saying, I'm like, I get it. I'm like, I get why she's solo poly. I get all of that. Like, I feel so seen just from this session.
I know. There's a lot of parallels. It's fun.
For sure. Exactly. But thank you for your time, and we appreciate you.
Yeah. Thank you for having me on. I had a great time.